Shabbat Shalom. Of all the gut check, heart wrenching, gulp inducing moments of this past week, the one I want to focus on this morning was, relatively speaking, rather modest. At the top of the list, no question, was a moment my oldest daughter walked into the back of the sanctuary around this time last week and greeted me stone-faced with the words, "Our family is fine, but there has been a shooting at the Tree of Life Synagogue in Pittsburgh." To process that distressing information, to think through the safety concerns there, here, in real time, in a packed sanctuary, remains, to be honest, a blur that will take a very, very long time to unpack. Nor, I imagine, will I soon forget our Shabbat lunch last Saturday, as Debbie and I tried best we could to be gracious hosts, all the while knowing that we existed in that next of kin temporal gap, nervously anticipating the names of the dead to be announced, names which by Sunday morning we knew that we knew. And then, of course, there has been the week-long, overwhelming dry heave of sorrow. The sorrow of sitting this past Wednesday in the very sanctuary in which Debbie and I were married, only this time for the funeral of the mother of one of Debbie's high school classmates. 1 week later, we are all still reeling, pivoting from one moment, one emotion to the next, trying to make sense of this world of ours forever changed by way of the murderous anti-Semitic rampage of a gunman in an American house of prayer. So when early this week, someone texted me the question, "Have you seen Zoe's Instagram account? You need to read it." It was not, relatively speaking, a gulp moment of the same magnitude. In this day and age, parents of teenagers live with varying degrees of vigilance when it comes to our children's social media presence. And as a parent of not one but four teenagers, I'm well aware of the tripwires that abound. My concern, truth be told, was not that Zoe had posted something untoward. She has heard more than one speech from me on that front. My concern, rather, was a question of what she had apparently said to the whole world, but not yet to me. The blessing and curse of social media is that while teenagers can be their characteristically reserved selves in sharing their thoughts with their parents, they now have a platform to give voice to their thoughts to a far-flung reading public, read by many, including in this case a family friend. What was it, I nervously wondered, was going on in my daughter's head? An unprecedented trauma had struck Pittsburgh's Tree of Life Synagogue, the Pittsburgh community, the Jewish community, and America as a whole. I know I have been shattered by the events of this past week, and I, at least as an adult, as a rabbi, have some coping mechanisms. How was my 15-year-old daughter coping? What had she posted in that shielded and yet altogether public forum of Instagram? Most likely, I thought to myself, she had probably shared her fears about personal safety in the face of violent anti-Semitism. In my household, discussions about anti-Semitism, historic or across the ocean, are not new. Israelis have no shortage of enemies, and we have grown accustomed to hearing news reports out of Israel and, to be sure, Europe. But here, in America, 11 Jews murdered in shul for no other reason than that they were Jewish, in the heart of a quiet and shady suburb whose streets my daughter has played on for as long as she can remember. What for one generation was the Munich 11, the 11 Israeli athletes gunned down in the 72 Olympics, has for my daughter's generation become the Pittsburgh 11. In every generation, the Haggadah reminds us, our enemies have risen up seeking to destroy us. We had hoped that our generation, our America, would be different. And here we are, once again, on this week that marks 80 years since Kristallnacht. The protective glass of our security has been smashed. My daughter knows that most of her British cousins have since left to go to Israel. Are American Jews the next to go? Are Jewish institutions safe? Can she walk down the street with visible signs of her Jewishness? My daughter also has a father who is a Jewish professional, a rabbi. Maybe she wrote about her fear of seeing her dad go to work every day in a synagogue, every Shabbat leading services, knowing that anti-Semitism, the oldest hatred, is still alive. Maybe she's trying to figure out why her Shomer Shabbat, Sabbath observant father now carries a cell phone in his pocket when he goes to shul on Shabbat, just in case. Just in case what, she may be asking. What does it mean to live in a country where Jews need to ask such questions? Maybe these are the sorts of questions that she's posting about. I imagine if I were a teenager, I would be a bit confused about anti-Semitism. This act was perpetrated by a white nationalist coming from the far right. But what about anti-Semitism on the far left, BDS and otherwise? Are all anti-Semitisms equal and equally threatening? It's hard to sort out for adults and for teenagers. My daughter's been taught to believe that what is good for Israel is good for the Jewish people. But what about our moment when the political left, the historic stronghold of Jewish values, are proving increasingly inhospitable to any expressions of support for Israel and its supporters? Or the other side, where segments of the Jewish community have given a pass to behaviors and politics antithetical to Jewish values, a political calculation that is believed to be in Israel's best interests. I don't think my daughter would use the word Faustian bargain, certainly not on Instagram. But if she did, maybe she would ask, at what point will these Jews wake up to the fact that at stake is not just the security of Israel, but also the security of Jews here in America, and for that matter, the very integrity of the Jewish value system we purport to hold dear. Interestingly, Zoe wasn't at Park Avenue last week, or for that matter, this week. The last few months, she's been making her rounds at Orthodox synagogues. And even more interestingly, she recently joined the Young Conservative Club at her school. Every child needs to rebel against their parents in some way. She is a critical thinker. At what point, my daughter may ask her newfound friend group, will they demonstrate the requisite courage to publicly disavow policies and behaviors that are contrary to core Jewish values and communal interests? My daughter, as do most adults and teens, spends a bit too much time with a screen in front of her. Given the world of social media she inhabits, maybe she wrote about other things she reads online. Everything from the bile of the blogosphere bottom feeders to the fire hose of hatred tweeted from the highest office of the land. My daughter does not have to be as politic as her father. Perhaps she wrote about what it means to grow up in a time where the occupant of the White House has completely abdicated any semblance of moral leadership. Maybe she has seen a clip of President Bush with a bullhorn at Ground Zero, or President Obama and his beer diplomacy, and wonders how it is that this President of the United States demonstrates on a daily basis the precise behaviors that her parents have taught her are totally unacceptable. Maybe she is just confused as to why, when tragedy strikes, the media turns to this man for comfort or moral guidance and act as nonsensical as turning to the Salvation Army for counsel on matters of national defense. It would defy logic for my daughter, and probably for all of us, to imagine that a president with Jewish children and grandchildren could be an anti-Semite. But any high school or even grade school kid knows that hurtful speech leads to violence, that no different than in the run-up to Yitzhak Rabin's assassination, unchecked speech can be weaponized. My teenage daughter knows that the president's thoughts as to how many guards should or shouldn't be deployed at a house of worship must be preceded by a commitment to demilitarize our rhetoric, to guard our lips from speaking evil, and to stop being a complicit enabler of the very hatreds that have taken root across our land. Maybe, just maybe, my daughter is scared. Maybe my daughter is angry. Most likely, I imagine, my daughter is just sad. First and foremost, sad at the lives lost on Pittsburgh's Jewish community. But maybe she also senses that Saturday's attack was an assault on a certain vision of America itself, a vision of America that welcomes the stranger, that welcomes the huddled masses yearning to be free, that celebrates difference, that dignifies views not of one's own, that embraces the other, that knows ourselves to be only as strong as our weakest link. Maybe her online thoughts reflected a deep and searing sadness brought about by the chipping away of the rule of law, civil liberties, and the vital institutions of our democracy. She is too young to vote, but maybe her sadness prompted her to react and ask and remind people to vote. After all, with an election just days away, maybe she wanted to stand up on a soapbox or a bima and yell out that if you don't vote, if you are not involved in the political process, then all your kvetching isn't worth a dime. Maybe she wrote that the liberties we enjoy as Americans should not be taken for granted, that they are liberties that oblige us to act and to support the work of those individuals who represent our highest hopes for our country. Zoe could have written about all these things. She could have written about gun laws. She could have written about immigration laws. She's a resourceful sort. Maybe her post included a link asking everyone to give to the Pittsburgh Jewish Federation to support a community in crisis. I finally read what she said. And it's public, so I didn't need to ask her permission, but having been granted permission, I'll read it to you now. In order to understand the post, you need to know that it was posted with a photograph attached, an adorable picture of Zoe with her siblings and her cousins at their grandmother's house in Squirrel Hill. The post reads as follows. I got home from shul on Saturday morning, and Jed told me that there had been a shooting in Pittsburgh. The 3 seconds before Jed told me our family was okay, my heart dropped. I couldn't breathe if a shooting had been what killed my grandparents or cousins. The other main conservative synagogue in Pittsburgh was where my parents got married and my mom had her bat mitzvah. This picture was taken at my grandparents' house in Squirrel Hill, Pittsburgh, less than a mile away from the Tree of Life Synagogue. I've been going to Pittsburgh as long as I've been alive. I even want to live there when I'm older, and the shooting that happened does not change that. We become numb to shootings and tragedies like this and don't think so hard about them until they become personal. This shooting was personal. My mom knows people who died. My grandparents, friends, and family all know the 11 people who we lost yesterday. A lot of people posted about what happened or just mentioned it in some way and then went on with their lives, whether it was a Halloween party or homework or something else. Not half an hour this weekend went by without me thinking about this. However, with all of this said, we must live for the people who have died, remember them by finding joy in our lives, and of course not forgetting their names and honoring the lives they lived before they were gone. I read her post, and I read it again, and I read it again, and I was comforted, and I was humbled, and I was proud. Proud of her, proud of her wisdom, proud of her resilience, and proud to be reminded that even rabbis have a lot to learn about what people need to hear in times of loss and sorrow, that there is a time for everything under the heavens, and that first and foremost, right now is a time to mourn and to weep, that in this world where adults never fail to wag their fingers at the next generation for possessing an ever-diminishing attention span, it can be a teenager who reminds us adults that we dare not go back to business as usual. It is a teenager who reminds us that our first task is to remember Jerry Rabinowitz, Irving Younger, Joyce Feinberg, Melvin Wax, Rose Malinger, Bernice Simon, Sylvan Simon, Richard Gottfried, Daniel Stein, Cecil Rosenthal, and David Rosenthal. To remember and honor each one of them, to pray for their souls, and to comfort their grief-stricken families. And then, like our patriarch Abraham himself upon the death of his beloved Sarah, to redouble our efforts to the living, to build a future that embodies our highest hopes for this world, that exemplifies the very values of those whom we are remembering, and to honor their lives by finding joy in the brief and uncertain span of our own lives. Shabbat Shalom.